this, the last hour of lecture
of the Congress, has as its title The Uses and Future of Scientology. It should begin with a little bit of time track. That is to say, a little bit of past. The use of Dianetics was, at optimum, the resolution of problems of existence. This is a goal of Scientology, but Dianetics stressed problems. You will find people who favor problems rather than action staying with Dianetics. They broke it off right there, and I left them right there. Mostly because we are interested in a science which returns motion and action to existence. These cultures and societies do not have to be as dull as they are, where everybody is forced down into a super control mechanism, compressed to a point where he doesn't dare wiggle. It doesn't mean that a return of motion in a society is a return to viciousness. You will find that viciousness, unethical conduct, rapaciousness, cruelty, so forth, are the product of a low tone, not a high one. You'll find that people in high tone get into trouble mostly because they aren't really specializing in how to hate. You can make quite a deal out of how to hate. And when it winds up, the end of it, the person who's doing all the hating is putting himself into a nice solid piece of mess. Now, where we talk about then broad love, this mawkish, horrible concept of you've got to love your neighbor, you son of a gun, or we'll beat your ears in and fry you for an eternity. No, let's not worry about love that close to hate. Admiration betokens in itself a kind of respect. It borders on liking, admiring. It's a much, much better word than love. Love, all too often, is a compulsive passion which devours the very young. And they go and starve to death and blow their brains out and pine and sigh and learn ridiculous dances. And this is love. They don't even see the person to whom they have attached their sentiment. They don't even know that person's there. They're in love. Admiration, a heady level of admiration, betokens a sort of respect. If you really admired somebody, you'd have to have some understanding of existence and some understanding of him or her. And believe me, it would have a lot more pleasantness and a lot more duration than this thing called love. And I use the word love just as it's used in the society today, and also as it's used by the Christian church, whatever might have happened to that in the last few centuries. Admiration, to admire existence, to find interest, pleasant interest or pleasant excitement in life itself, its motion and action. To be able to respect and admire livingness in a thing rather than to trap and cage that livingness for possession. And that would be the difference between love and admiration. A thing which is loved has to be trapped and caged. A thing which is admired is the thing which you would like to see free. There's all the difference in the world, then, between a top-scale emotion like admiration and a bottom-scale emotion like love. Love is down there with hate, so close to it that they flip like a gambler's card. Passionate devotion, very, very passionate devotion,
where it does not include observation, is love. Devotion, where it does include observation,
would be admiration.
There's nothing wrong with loyalty. There's nothing wrong with honesty. Very strange thing, but in most men's minds today, they wonder how it is that anybody can see any advantage in honesty or decency, any of these things. It doesn't pay. One gets it, to be colloquial, in the neck for honesty, decency, fair play. If in this society today you go out on the line and you say insistently and continuously, let's be honest, let's try to carry forward as best we can, let's help our fellows, and let's keep going and give the best service we possibly can give to everyone,
you wouldn't think that that attitude would be questioned or fought. Too many men know that that sort of an attitude is immediately received by a slapback. People who are low on the tone scale or in cruelty and so on, they're so thirsty, so hungry for admiration, for space, for anything, that they take someone who is acting like that and they chew him up and spit him out, if they can.
The whole answer to the problem, believe me, the whole answer to the problem is just be too big a mouthful. Now, when I say that a person has to be able to have control of force and to be able to use force in order to be responsible, please don't interpret that a person uses force. You have to be able to go up through all the dynamics. Does not mean that you have to be and run and address and consider every facet of every dynamic. You just have to be in a state of mind which is willing to be. Force is sitting there at about 20 on down. You get up above force, you don't need force. The second that you get into flows, you start running concepts and things and ridges and energy and its raw masses. You're getting into flows. And when you get into flows, you become the effect of flows, just as a person getting into too many engrams becomes the effect of engrams. An effect is not cause. It is the thing upon which cause operates. A little while ago, I picked up a glass and moved it over here. That glass was effect. It was responding perfectly and completely to a cause. It was the most effect that you can get, just about. A person has to be somewhat an effect in the universe in order to be here at all. It's when a person is afraid to be an effect that he's starting to get into trouble. And so, in using the material of Scientology, the first step would be to get up to a consideration where one has a willingness to be, not that one has to be. He has to be willing to be. There is a high level of tolerance. This can easily be mistaken at the bottom of the tone scale for abject surrender. When one wants to see life in a happier and higher state, it doesn't mean that he's propitiating all existence. He can admire the struggles that are going forward, appreciate them, and on the computation of the eight dynamics, try to resolve the problem in terms of the maximal survival for the maximal number of dynamics. And that's an optimum solution and always will be. And it doesn't consist of very much hating. It consists of a lot of admiring. When you can honestly say you love human beings, not compulsively have to, you will heave quite a sigh of relief about the whole thing. They're bad. They're wicked. They have dirty noses. They carry diseases around. They fight back at you. You try to patch up a gaping throat that somebody has cut, and the first thing the person does whose throat you have patched up is to get up and bite you. Again, be too big a mouthful. That's the only answer. Life acts like that. It fights. It has tremendous strength and potentials. It is an enormously wonderful manifestation. And when one can see what it is doing, he can understand what it is doing. All he has to do is look at it. By golly, once in a while you're walking down the street and you're seeing this dirty, coal-strewn walk, you see some green grass growing out through the crack, and you say, for heaven's sake, life, how did you ever get there? Well, once in a while you see something that has made good on a struggle of that magnitude, and you sort of want to reach in there and pick it up and put it over to a place where it can grow a lot better. That's actually the boat, to some degree, I find myself in with man. He can sure grow a lot better. He sure can. When some fellow who is all full of ginger, he's all set to go in life, and he's all ready to make a tremendous success out of things in all directions, and all of a sudden the army grabs hold of him and puts a rifle in his hands and tells him to go over and shoot a fellow he's not been introduced to, and he lives in the mud. And he gets out of the army, and he's so used to people saying, oh, squads east and squads west, that he doesn't know what he's doing. Here they put all the youth of America today up against becoming, all the young men, up against becoming soldiers when they're 18. They're not good soldier material. Soldiers are born. And they're not in the highest percentage in the populace. And there are many fellows who get a tremendous thrill out of being a soldier. They just love this idea of being a soldier. They like to obey orders. They go around, as long as this is running this way, fine. They like to be disciplined, punished. Doesn't matter to them. They're being a soldier, and that's what they're supposed to be doing. Nowadays, you only find that in the Marine Corps. When you look at life, you realize that a certain amount of discipline, a certain amount of punishment, a certain amount of agony is bred to life. It's randomity. But when you have given your allegiance to a species or a culture, and it comes up against bumpers on the track, and it's slowing down, slowing down, slowing down, and it's starting to lose its sense of direction, you're sure entitled to do something about it. You're sure entitled to disturb what it is laughingly calling self-determinism. You sure are. And that, in essence, perhaps not too well thought out, a concept, because it isn't something about what you think. That's more or less what I envision a Scientologist is doing. Getting the wheels turning. Getting the show on the road. And keeping a culture from falling on its face. I've written down here a few things. It should be very, very exaltedly written in beautiful English or something of the sort. But it's not. It's just a few things that I thought of in connection with what is a Scientologist. I would say he was somebody who brought light and humanity to man and his sciences, because man neglected to bring humanity in when he brought in science. There's nothing at all wrong with physics, chemistry, or mathematics, electronics, or anything else. Until some little slap-happy guy who doesn't even know he has a next-door neighbor decides that the machine is far more important than men. And when he decides that, Scientologist, of course, has perfect right to shoot him. Anyway, a Scientologist is a troubleshooter. A troubleshooter. You know that people get into trouble they can't get out of. With great, suddenly, life's going along, they're doing all right, and suddenly the gates sort of drop across the time track, and they just can't get out of that much trouble. Well, nobody in the past could get a person out of that much trouble. Here's a fellow, he goes along all right, the baby's born, his wife has all of a sudden dizzy notions that she ought to kill the child. He's in too much trouble. His life for the next 30, 50 years is going to be a burden to him. Well, a Scientologist can very well do something about that, but that isn't all. What about the fellow who just thought it was wonderful to go around and have big adventures and all of a sudden found himself falling into the traps of criminality? Nobody would let him have any adventure, and he found out he couldn't have any adventure, and he finally sunk down to the level of being a criminal. What right does this society have to keep men in cages? Well, I'll tell you what right it has. None. Scientologists can do something about that very definitely. He's a troubleshooter for the individual, for children, the family, and the political and economic group. He knows what life's about. He knows whether it's on its rails or it's off the rails. He knows whether a corporation is failing or not failing simply by estimating its level on a tone scale. How simple. What's the state of internal communications of a corporation? Well, if you just look at that, what's the state of your inter-office communications around here, boss? What inter-office communications? You say, well, I'll give this company about 6 months. That's about it. It'll drag along that way. Here'll be a lot of guys out of work suddenly. Here's management not taking its responsibility like it should. That's the economic group. And what about a political group? Well, there isn't too much you can do about political groups because they come and they go. But there is one thing about the world today which is intensely interesting, is that the two parasitic groups of the world are at war one with the other. There are two parasitic groups in the world today which are at war with each other and which are causing more commotion. Everybody's so flabbergasted they don't quite know what's happening. And one of them's communism, the other's capitalism. Communism is a military aristocracy which depends upon the worker, and capitalism is a money aristocracy which depends upon the worker. And the guy who's going along and is the manager. The manager, the worker, and the people who service the managers and workers. That's the society. Those are three groups. Everything just goes along fine. There's the manager, the entrepreneur, the fellow who manages things, the foreman, and then there's the fellow who's got his hands on the tools and who's building things. And then there's that vast class of tradesmen and wives and motion picture show operators and all these other people that service the worker. He won't get any place servicing managers. There aren't enough of them. So you have these three operating groups, and they're just going along splendidly until a military aristocracy comes in and says at the point of a pistol, we are now going to sit down and you're going to feed us. On account of we can shoot, and it's in the law that we can shoot and you can't. And the other one is the fellow who says, I control all the buying power of the entire community, therefore you are all slaves. Those are two political groups today that aren't letting us do too well on the world at large. Our income taxes today are directly attributable to this big mock-up between these two parasitic forces, capitalism and communism. Who cares about either one?
Karl Marx blew up capitalism in 1870 and unfortunately raised the standard of communism at the same time. Now we read about it in the newspapers every morning. I'd rather read a good column of jokes. The Scientologist can remedy and rectify conditions unfavorable to the survival of desirable life forms. Conditions unfavorable to the survival of desirable life forms. He has to make up his mind, what's a desirable life form? Well, he always has things that he's siding with. Right now, you're siding with man. Therefore, flies aren't desirable. And he remedies and rectifies conditions favorable to the survival of undesirable life forms. Favorable to the survival of undesirable life forms. I tell you, if you had mosquitoes all over the place here, or had them all over Jersey, it'd be a pretty good project to go out some sunny with some kerosene cans and throw some kerosene on those ponds, and boy, the mosquito population would suddenly take a nosedive. That's well within your purview, because it's part of the contest of man and life against the environment of the messed universe. And some forms of life have taken it into their minds that they must be the only thing that eats. And when you get a form of life which takes that into its mind, it's the only thing it's going to eat, and it's not going to let anything else eat anywhere, that's bad. That's real bad. What's bad and what's good? Well, that happens to be bad. And the capitalist says, I'm the only one that can have two Cadillacs, shoot him. If a guy running a machine press down there is producing good stuff and so forth, let him have a Cadillac too. What's the matter with that? Nothing. Not a thing. But it wouldn't be a distinguishing badge that somebody could wear as he drove down the street. Understand, I'm not beating the drum for either of these two insanities. I'm just trying to talk about something that's pretty good sense. And neither one of these are good sense. I assure you, I know both of them. They're just not good sense. I've been up to my ears in CPs and capitalists, both. Too high. I almost drowned. Now, a Scientologist is a counselor for problems of culture. Isn't that a nice broad statement? Well, the funny part of culture is, culture consists of the productivity, the art forms. Here's where you would enter that immediately. You might know of a Broadway stage starlet who was doing fair. Just fair, you see. A little too self-conscious. You go to a show, you see this little girl. She looks like she'd do all right, but she just isn't up there anyplace. You got to have enough brass to go back of the scenes and pull her up the tone scale, make an actress out of her. You're helping culture when you're doing that. You would be amazed today, for instance, that there are forms of culture out across the world which are astonishing in their beauty, which still survive over many centuries, so on. Somebody's helping them along. And they're really all that's left of an entire flourishing race. These forms of art are still there. Practically nothing else is. If you want to deal with survival in the raw, deal with art forms. Another thing a Scientologist could be is a counselor for those responsible for the conduct and planning of political and economic groups. You know, there's an awful lot of fellows around that are carrying a terrific weight on their backs. They just don't think there's anything at all could possibly help them out. They really thought you could help them out. Your first interview with them would be, well, no, they didn't want any of that. What is it, soap? But they really knew you could help them out. Boy, you'd be right in there. These guys need help. Somebody said one time, the world is carried on the backs of a few desperate men. Very probably true. If you find any of these desperate men, why, give them just a little more back. A Scientologist would be a teacher of doctrines useful in the tasks of survival. Things like concepts of the eight dynamics, the basic drives of existence. I had a fellow tell me one time, because you have no idea what the impact of that first article was, he said, I was in bed. I've been sick for a long time. I read the first article and I got out of bed. I said, to hell with being sick. He didn't get any processing. He just suddenly integrated life. And there he had something. He understood it better. He got well. The doctrines all by themselves have a potency which you shouldn't neglect. Somebody comes in, sits down, you process them for a little while, and they go away. They think they know what Scientology is. No, they don't know what it is. It's the codification of an understanding of existence which is assimilable by man. Scientologists would be a social catalyst dedicated to the mission of raising the standards of happiness of man and bringing him to recognize his brotherhood with the universe. Scientologist would be a leader in man's conquest of his environment. And that's about the summation that I would care to make of it. That's a lot of things. It's very easy, very, very easy to be or do many of those things. Let's look at the eight dynamics, and we find out that as soon as one is much more willing to be the first dynamic, much more willing, he gets interested in kids, he gets interested in groups, so on. And the truth of the matter is that this universe is a tremendously interesting place. One has to talk about it being a mean place once in a while, simply because nobody will agree with him about anything else. One can make, is capable of making a universe of his own, certainly. That's parascientology. That's something that's a little bit out of our ken when we're dealing with this universe alone. We needn't worry about that. But you'll find that you probably, and probably the majority of your pre-clears, will come upscale in motion, in terms of motion alone, up to the point where you are no longer able to stay disinterested. It's a tremendously interesting universe. You get into motion, you get into action. You're going to remember times when you were a kid, when life just looked too doggone deliciously beautiful to be left alone. Well, you could feel like that again if you worked at it. What do you think will happen to you when you find life is just too good to be left alone? You'll start living it. Wherever you suddenly moved into that phase and stayed there, you'll hit it a few times and then miss it. A little more process and you'll start to hit it more constantly, and away you'll go. And all too many with this knowledge will just sort of forget about it and go into complete motion and dickens with it. They won't say very much about it. All too many. But a great many of them will. I don't advocate at any time that a person spend the rest of his life working other people through processing. This would be a poor prospect. To spend the next 50, 90, 200 years, however long you're going to live, we won't go into that just now. Spending nothing but sitting down, processing somebody who's sitting down. That would be real rough. It's not near as hard to process a number of people at the same time. That's fact. You can process a lot of people much easier than one person. That's why I say groups are very good. Yet, one might very well find for years to come a great deal of interest and satisfaction in processing individuals. That's all very well, too. But remember, there's a lot of other things that you can do. And if you start concentrating all the time upon the unable and the sick, you really won't be in there pitching hard for the culture at large. You should be pitching an optimum solution. And that's not working continually in favor only of those who are incapable. The society is running because of capable people. A lot of things can be done for it. Tremendous numbers of things can be done for it. I have found man relatively deficient in imagination
as to what to do.
But it's a case again. I found people unwilling to go out. Most people are unwilling simply to stop somebody in a lobby or on a street. They just say, come to my office or come to my home tomorrow. I'm going to give you some dynamic processing. I'm going to give you some cytology processing, either one. You'll be surprised what happens. You should do it. They don't bite. They're tame dogs. Their emotions practically stopped. They can't even snarl. You say to them, hey, here's this fellow, he's a road foreman. You see him out there and he's been trying to build roads for a long time. Believe it or not, the fellow's scarce. There aren't many of the people that can do that kind of a job or stand up to it and so on. Where if you were to take that fellow and sit him down and run him through six steps to better beingness and a few other things, snap him back up to it again, boy, what a difference it would make to his crew. And what a difference it would make to the continuation of that road. Because they start fighting a road hard enough so that they stop them in building eventually. You see how it could be. It depends to a large degree upon initiative and imagination, but you have the tools with which to bring yourself to a level of such initiative and imagination if you do not have it already. Therefore, life at large is actually waiting for you with open arms. And who will thank you? You will thank yourselves. That's the only person that can thank you. As soon as you run admiration processing for a little while, you'll find out the horrible thing of it is you expect admiration from this environment. Mess happens to be incapable of delivering admiration, and most men are so dried out when it comes to admiration that there isn't any flowing. And women specialize more in pulling their anchor points in than pushing them out. That's because of the nature of the construction of the body. Where are you going to get admiration from man anyway? From your own bank. You're your own paymaster. You always will be. And yet it's a lot of fun at the same time to mock yourself up, complete with the messed mock-ups of being thanked. That's all right. As long as you don't suddenly start to feel you have to have it. And that's like the drunkard who has to have another drink. And believe me, all he ever becomes is an alcoholic. An admaholic, I guess you would call somebody. So, on the uses and future of Scientology, one can look at an entire universe, but he looks at a universe not of speculation, but of action. You don't have to think twice or give notice to people who are thinking about it. People who are thinking about it are not dangerous. They don't handle guns, knives, they don't run fast. Most of the time, they don't even talk bitingly. You could sit and think about it for 50 years, and neither you nor anything else would be any better for it. So when I talk about Scientology and its uses, please don't think about it. Just do it. Dianetics was what you could think about. Now, what do you mean by action? Action is just motion. Any motion's better than no motion. When I was a young writer, they used to tell me, never under any circumstances write action for the sake of action. Never. If that professor weren't dead, and if I could find him today... I don't know where he is. He left no forwarding address.
Thetans are discourteous that way. Boy, oh boy, I'd certainly like to give him something, because they teach an artist to work with restraint. Oh, the one thing art isn't is restrained, if you please. It is directed motion, which means a certain amount of discipline has to go into any motion an artist makes. But is that restraint? I've never seen Catherine Dunham make a restrained motion. And yet, at the same time, I think you'll agree she's an artist. All right. What is then the optimum use of what you know? One of it is teaching it so that others can know. But how would you teach it? By going over it, little by little? No, you could best teach it by example. You can give the rudiments, the integrative data, which suddenly sparks another mind. But it would be unfair of you if you did not give him as well the techniques which, having moved him into thinking, would not again move him out. You see? Action. The difference between a young man and an old man is an old man knows he can be hurt, and the young man doesn't care. And the difference between a young girl and an older woman is essentially the same thing. When it comes to matters, esoteric matters, on the part of a young man or the young woman, of beauty and so on, do you realize that animation always arrives at the finish line while beauty is thinking about it? I have been at embassy balls and dinners time after time to find the belle of the ball. A young girl? Oh, no. The young girls were over there against the walls hoping somebody would ask them to dance. Some old gal who really had a beautiful line. She understood and knew life. And all the desirable young men weren't over there by the wall. There was beauty. And here was charm. What is charm? Charm is the ability to reach out, be, and admire. Your personal appearance, outside of the fact that the society objects to a dirty shirt, doesn't mean very much when it comes to charm. Anything you build up on charm in way of a mock-up is that much more gratifying, of course. But you, practically, with an idea, with knowing what you were doing, with certainty, with poise, with the ability to laugh, or the ability to be dignified, each in its place, you, to go out into this society, you don't know it sitting here. It's fantastic that people don't know this. But life out there is so far gone. You just start walking through it. And it just goes apart like grass. There's nothing interrupting your line of motion. Nothing. It's fabulous. But life today has no great resistance in this society. Its pioneer period is at end. The vitality of the country is very definitely on the wane. There's no opposition. People keep asking me all the time, medicine, why doesn't medicine, why don't these things attack you? This is something I can't answer, because they don't realize it's like looking at a table. Why doesn't the table attack you? The answers to this, a couple of times that they have chopped in my direction, and so forth, I have written such tremendously courteous letters about their own habits of sexual perversion that they've unchopped quick. And there isn't any fight. All that is ever fought are people whom I have brought up tone scale far enough so they could fight. don't expect anybody to fight you out there. You'll get bored after a while because nobody does. You may even wind up by going around processing a doctor so he'll be a little spunky. That's all I want to say to you about the uses and future, beyond a word or two about what I'm doing, what you might find interesting. I'm going to open a clinic. And in the first weeks of that, I'm not taking any paying pre-clears of any kind. I'm trying to train some auditors way, way, way up. Because I found out that whenever I trained an auditor well, when he walked out into the society, there was a spreading pool of light going from him. In other words, more and more and more people knew what they were doing. One boy who was just well processed and well trained appeared in a part of the country, and from that part of the country to date, there have just been dozens of letters. Dozens of them. These people are flabbergasted. This couldn't have happened to the boy. And the last time I saw him, he looked like he was still in terrible shape. But he looked like a flaming beacon to these people. And so we have a possibility by, you might say, super training, some of those already trained, to bring about this condition in several parts of the country or the world. As far as the clinic itself is concerned, I hope to go on and process children in the main and process lots of them in the direction of someday putting together a children's hospital somewhat different than any existing today. And the only reason that I am calling it a hospital here, so you will understand what I mean, you can think of what a hospital would be that used Scientology. It'd be a recreation center. Well, where kids could get well and get oriented. I hope to go out for a conference on the other coast, probably the last week in December. It may be after that time that I will do some lecturing out there. But that is very much in the future. Right here, the first 6 weeks after this Congress, I am devoting to the training of a handful of auditors, trying to bring them way up and over the top. And the pressure of that has been sufficiently great that it may be necessary for me to start in another 6 weeks at the end of this 6 weeks. I will have to see how that goes. But what I am going toward is better dissemination of information and better auditors. That even might mean fewer auditors. In the past, I have been occasionally disappointed at the results people were getting. Believe me, I'm responsible for those results. If the techniques wouldn't bring the auditor up, then I should have been thinking harder and working harder on the subject. And so I hope in the future this problem will not exist with us as it has in the past, of an auditor who is incapable of processing people properly. There isn't any point in it now. Here and there through the country where you have areas where there are auditors who have drifted away, it might be tremendously beneficial if you, as a little project, might go around and dig them out from underneath the rocks and put them in a group and process. Because, honest, some of these people have practically slid under the rocks. Here and there. Poor guys. They got in there and they beat their heads against pre-clears harder and harder and got their engrams more and more restimulated and started down tone scale. They got no processing, and eventually kind of went into apathy. There isn't any reason for that. It'd be a very easy thing for a Scientologist to pick up and process such auditors. He can still find people who know where these people are. He can still find lists, old bulletins and things like that, 1950 and so on, still carry lots of names and addresses. If he wanted to really do a good service to Scientology, he would simply get in there and browbeat not argue about parascientology, you're not there to teach them anything, just get them together and process them, that's all. Give them 6 steps to better beingness, over and over and over and over. You might have to hire a gunman to go out and round them up for the second session. But it'd be a very worthwhile project, because then nobody would be arguing in your area against your auditing. And that would be optimum. There isn't any such thing as a scarcity of preclears. The streets are full of them. The hospitals are full of them. All you have to do is reach out and take them by the ear and put them down in a chair. Everybody's a preclear. Nothing to it. You get most men to talking about their problems, and they don't talk, they avalanche on you. They all got problems, and you can solve those problems. You should know a great many things about Scientology, but if you don't know that great many things, you still hold in your hands, even if you don't comprehend all of it, the answer in 6 steps to better beingness. Now, typically, there was an argument in a seminar about acceptance level processing. They didn't quite know how it was used. I put on these tapes how it was used, and you can always hear them again, either in your own area or right here. But I asked this auditor if anybody tested it out in the group that was arguing about it. And nobody had. In other words, nobody looked. They wanted to think. And remember that it will solve any of your problems, any of them. If you find yourself really up against it sometime, the answer is look. That's all. So this whole seminar could tie itself in knots over how you used acceptance level processing. If somebody had just started them, they said they didn't have an E-meter. That doesn't matter. An E-meter's an awful good thing to have around with a tricky preclear, but to demonstrate something like this, they would have found out all over again how you used it. You just get people to accept things in brackets, that's all. And you just start down tone scale with the items you're asking them to accept. Can you accept now a nice, bright, cheerful mama? No. Can you accept a very dull mama? No. Can you accept a very cross mama? Well, can you accept a mean, vicious mama? Yeah. That one starts going in. How about a mean, vicious, diseased mama? Yes, that really goes in. Yes, that's acceptance level processing. Because that's the acceptance level of the preclear. He'll actually try to make his mother into that person as she lives. Not just in mock-up. But he'll really work to make her that person. So he can accept her, of course. And there you have interpersonal relations. But if you have a question about something, look. For you have all the periscopes and binoculars you need in these processes. There will be other processes. There will be other developments. There will be other news, reports. Tremendous codification of data necessary in terms of what sicknesses are we really knocking on. How long can a man live? How old a preclear can you process? And all sorts of things. The whole horizon is open. So there's lots of material to be known.
What's the record on age now,
Ron? I don't know. I processed a fella 96 once with success. I imagine somebody's done better than that. The point is that here's tremendous wealth of interesting material coming out. But it's coming out of what? The processes which you now hold in your hands. And that is all at this time, except one thing that I care to say about it. I want to give you here the office address of both organizations here. The basic training in this area, which is to say TAPE and doctorate level training, is being given
by the Hubbard Foundation, and that is 237 North 16, Villa 2. Villa 2. That's the Hubbard Foundation. That organization does the training in terms of fundamentals, doctorate course tapes, and so on. The publications unit of the HAS is the HAS of Pennsylvania, distinctly different than any other HAS. It is the organization which gets out the journal and booklets. And that is the HASP, Hubbard Association of Scientologists of Pennsylvania, Journal of Scientology, and so forth. And it's at 1605 Race Street, Philadelphia 2. Now, the clinic where I will be operating is the HAS Processing Center and it is at 726 Cooper Street, Camden, New Jersey, 726 Cooper Street, Camden, New Jersey. And this actually is where my secretary will be sitting, although I have an office at the Hubbard Foundation too. So this clinic, we'll call it a clinic, only it isn't, will specialize in the processing of children, but will also do very, very advanced training, occasionally, and clinical-type training. That's very advanced training. That isn't basic or fundamental. The processing done here, however, occasionally I get requests from people to be processed. Why, this would be the processing center where such requests, which are addressed to me, would be placed. And that is the HAS Processing Center, 726 Cooper, Camden, New Jersey. A lot of you occasionally are very flighty on the subject of sending me a letter because you say it isn't going to get to me. Well, by golly, your letters even reached me when I was in the middle of Spain. They went to London, and they were flown down there and so on, but they were so darn slow by the time they had come down there. And by the time I dictated answers and they'd gone back to England and so forth, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised for what you aren't receiving replies to these things 2 or 3 weeks even from now. But I hope to speed up that communication line, and I'm trying to do so. And this will be the U.S. communication address. Remember what these various functions and addresses are, because people have a hard time in communicating. Coming through. Basic training, and so forth over at the Hubbard Foundation at 237, and that's doctorate level training, actually. All I'm giving is clinical, very, very close training, close up against the whole problem, and theory, investigation, axioms, and that sort of thing. And very intimate coaching of the individual on how to audit. Take a break.